You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello, you are listening to William Hill's Daily Racing Podcast for Saturday. Loads coming up this Saturday live on William Hill's Racing Radio. In the afternoon, meetings at Sandown, Leicester, Beverley and Haydock. And in the evening, we're at Nottingham, Carlisle and across the Irish Sea at Bellewstown. Naz Premji, Tom Morley and Craig Forsyth will be live from quarter past one to bring you all the live action analysis and selections as well. But for now, to look ahead to the day and specifically to Eclipse Day at Sandown Park, my name's John Gibby and I'm joined by Ross Briley. Hello, Ross.
Hello, John.
Are you well?
I am better for sitting in an air-conditioned studio with you, my good man.
Oh, you...
All my dreams have come true.
You know how to flatter a guy, Ross.
Well, it's been said.
Brilliant. Well, we'll get on to the day at Sandown as well, one of the races at Haydock Park, in a little while. But first up, we've got to talk about a couple of issues that are in the news here, Ross.
Yep.
And it's fair to say that in the last 24 hours, racing Twitter has... exploded.
It's kicked off, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has very much.
Well, yes, there's been a fairly inflammatory... inflammatory front cover. I suppose, actually, the actual column is more reasonable than the front cover makes it look out. But that's how you sell papers these days.
Yeah.
With a front cover that doesn't necessarily tell the whole story. Yes, racing must ban the whip, John.
That is what Tom Kerr in the Racing Post has been saying in his column today.
That is it.
Today being Friday.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, for a second I was like, is it? Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I've gone through all sorts of emotions. I mean, the first one is I always... There's a tendency in racing that any time you suggest you change anything, it's like, we thought we might paint this door blue. But that's been red for 50 years. You can't paint that door blue. This is tradition. So there is a slight inclination for anyone in racing to suggest that any change is bad. So part of me thinks, well, let's have a chat about this. And I'm open to the conversation.
Yeah.
The whip is superfluous. I have never ridden a racehorse at speed. I personally don't know how much impact it does make. The people involved in riding the horses at speed say that it does make an impact and it is there for useful purposes. And of course, you know, it's a cushioned whip. It's in theory, it's designed to not to hurt the horse, to merely concentrate the mind, shall we say. But of course, I mean, I think the problem is you become so desensitized to it.
Yeah.
That you forget what's actually going on. I suppose a younger generation who are coming up and are less experienced about racing are going to be maybe a bit confused by the whole thing.
Well, I think what got to me about this whole thing, you know, the debate about having the whip or not is fine, but in all this week in the Racing Post, they've been having this conversation about how to broaden racing's appeal.
Yeah.
Which has largely been Racing Post writers, members of the public, just saying what they want to see changed about racing as opposed to how to broaden its appeal.
Yeah.
Now, I've got a lot of friends who aren't into racing.
Yeah.
Which might shock you, Russ. But,
yeah. You've got a lot of friends or they're not into racing?
Both parts. And... a lot of the time, you know, Tom Kerr talked about the younger generation.
Yeah.
I'm in my early 20s, and when I tell a lot of people I'm really into racing, welfare is one of the first things they bring up.
Yes, totally, yeah.
And then to see some trainers come out today and say, why are the Racing Post trying to create issues for racing that doesn't exist? You know, this conversation about welfare has to be had because
100%.
It's an issue.
No, I agree entirely, and I do feel sometimes slightly uneasy because I feel like I am slightly on the defensive about it. So there is anything that could open you up to criticism has to be considered. And I think part of the problem is, a lot of the time, is that when people are so ingrained in an industry or a sport, they can't see the wood for the trees because all they've ever known is their personal experience from it. And they can't remember the time where they were looking at it through fresh eyes. And as you said, yeah, welfare is a big thing. And if the whip is going to be a concern, we either find a way to explain it better, and you probably have to, do some, like, show me a study, show me something that says, and I don't mean done by, a charity in inverted commas that's already decided what they want to do, you know, that's already against racing, and I don't mean someone in racing either. You need some sort of independent study that says what impact is this having.
Yeah,
and I don't think that would necessarily be a bad thing.
No.
So I'm open to the conversation, but I do feel that the whole thing today was slightly over the top.
Yeah,
shall we say?
Yeah.
But I think in what happens a lot of the time, just in life, is you get comfortable, you get used to something, and when someone does bring up the question, you go, "Well, I don't do that," or "That can't possibly be the case." And then actually, when you take a bit of time, once you've actually backed down a bit and you've taken a bit of time to look into the issue, you might think, "Oh, actually, same." I mean, the Grand National is an ideal example, isn't it? You know, uproar about how we can't change anything, it's the Grand National. And now, do people honestly watch the Grand National and go, I'm not watching this anymore, this is boring, this is dull? No, of course not. And the changes are for the better.
I saw someone make the point on Twitter the other day, or today in fact, when they made the change to the Grand National a few years ago, everyone was making the argument, oh, this is just going to encourage the antis, so-called. This is going to stir them up and encourage them and, you know, give fuel to their fire. No fatal injuries in the Grand National for 5 years, and they're beginning to
quieten down. Yeah, admittedly, yeah. It's the same with everything. You shouldn't just bow down to pressure on anything, but to defend any position, you have to understand where the opposition is coming from, and you need to look into these things. If you think it's going to be a problem, you need to be aware of it and ready to look into it and defend it. And if you genuinely can't defend it, then maybe they've got a point.
Mm.
But I think that needs looking into.
Well, Ross, we could probably sit here for a very long time talking about the issue of racehorse welfare, which is a massive, massive issue. We do have to get on.
Admittedly, racehorse welfare is the ultimate issue. Mm. That's the key thing. So even if someone just goes, let's have a look.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they come back and go, no, it's fine. We'll keep it. There's no problems.
It's why I was so surprised that up until this article, literally today, Friday, in the Racing Post, in a week of articles about broadening racing's appeal, this was the first mention of welfare in any of those articles. I read them all. The first time it had been brought up.
Yeah, and to be fair, that's the main thing that that's the main good point that Tom Kerr makes in the Racing Post, is that we live in a society where people are more, they care more about what they eat, where their possessions come from, where their money goes. I mean, mainly because people have less of it as well. That's another thing as well. So, you know, like I said, purse strings are tightening.
Yeah.
People going to racing might want to be one of those things that goes. So you need to make sure the next generation are intrigued.
Well, I'm sure this debate over use of the whip, as brought up by Tom Kerr in the Racing Post today, will carry on over the coming days and weeks. Be interesting to see how that goes on. But now we've got another issue that's been in the news today, Ross, and that's the news that Richard Johnson is going to be, I think, are they called the first choice rider for Warren Great Tricks?
Yes.
This coming jump season.
So not stable jockey.
That's not the term they're using.
Yeah, we're going for first choice rider.
First choice rider.
I mean, he would probably be the first choice rider for most trainers if you'd given them the choice. Yeah, as you were saying on the radio just a second ago, it's a good thing. As I said, I think Gavin Sheehan maybe has just lost a bit of his confidence over the past year or so. And Warren Gracious seemed to be on the up. He seemed to have a lot of horses, Cole Harden and One Track Mind, that were very much on the verge of breaking him into another level. And it hasn't quite worked out that way. So once this opportunity has come up, and however it's gone on behind the scenes, it's clearly a good thing. And also Richard Johnson's riding style suits Warren Greatrex's horses. They're both jockey and trainer, like their horses to bowl along and get on with things. So I think it looks like a good setup to me.
It's interesting for the Greatrex yard as well. You mentioned they haven't had quite so many of the big names this season just gone. I think I read in terms of individual winners, is that their best season?
Well, I think this is the thing. They have a lot of there's a lot of promise in the yard. And I think I imagine the idea to team up with a top jockey like Richard Johnson is that promise is one thing, but you need someone to see you to that consistency to see you through to the next level, and experience is invaluable. So I think it's, yeah, you've got the potential of the horses in Warren's yard, and you've got the experience of the jockey, Richard Johnson. So I think it's a good move.
It'll be very interesting to see how that pans out for Warren Greatrex, as Richard Johnson is not his stable jockey, his first choice jockey.
First choice, yeah.
In the coming national hunt season. But now we switch our attention to the flats, and a big day racing coming up on Saturday, including one of the biggest group ones of the season in the form of the Eclipse. We'll get onto that in a little bit, but we'll go through the races, the big races of the day in time order, I think, Ross.
All right.
And we'll start off with the 150 at Sandown. That's the Sandown Charge. It's a Group 3 over 5 furlongs. Some decent sprinters in this, maybe lacking an absolute superstar, but some useful types.
Yeah, totally, yeah. I mean, it generally is like in a superstar. It's kind of almost like a consolation prize for those horses who aren't quite up to the quality of the King Stand or the July Cup next week. Batash looks a worthy favourite. It was one of those races. I mean, the first thing to mention about this race is I can't find a front runner. There doesn't seem to be any genuine pace in here. Gracious John likes to get on with things. Tis Marvellous has been known to front run. And to be fair, Batash has been known to front run as well. And I think, given that he's bagged the box near the rail in box two, I think he's going to be pretty keen to get on with things here. He came from the back last time out to win over course and distance, and he was impressive in doing so. But his form last year was from forcing the pace more often than not. So it'd be a surprise if Dane O'Neill didn't take the bull by the horns from that draw, especially with no other obvious front runners, and especially as the first two races at Sandown on Friday over 5 furlongs were both won by front runners.
Oh, right.
So it'd be a surprise to see Dane O'Neill show any restraint, really, with Batash. Goldreen bled last time out, so a line can be put through him. Killang Rock looks a little awkward. I thought he was going to go by last time, but he didn't. And Alpha Delphine is drawn out in box 11, but he should be suited by the track. So, yeah, I didn't really want to go for Batash, but the more I went through the field, I thought this looks like it's going to be set up for him.
I was just looking through the form of Mifmir earlier on, actually, who I'd sort of discounted a little bit in my mind. But looking at his most recent races, he's only really run one bad race recently. And that was that was in the Newmarket Sprint,
The Palace House.
The Palace House, that's the name. Which was obviously won by Marsha when she'd have had the penalty. But I think he was drawn in the wrong place in that race. It was dominated by the high-drawn horses. I think he was drawn 5 that day, something like that. And other than that, you know, he was 3¼ lengths behind Lady Aurelia at Royal Ascot. Won the time before that over in France. And won the time before the Newmarket race on his reappearance at Bath. So,
yeah.
He's got some good form he's stacked up.
Yeah, it's just his run style. He is a hold-up performer, and with a lack of pace and drawn out in 8, it wouldn't surprise me to see him finish an unlucky 3rd or 4th.
Okay, well, the 150 at Sandown, the Sandown Charge, Batash, the favourite for Ross Briley in that one. We'll move along now to Haydock at 2:40. They have the Lancashire Oaks over 1 mile, 4 furlongs, Group 2 for fillies and mares, of course. And we've had 8 declared for this one, Ross. Abingdon, the favourite, having won very, very well last time out.
Yeah, came back to the track with a decisive success over at Ponty. Absolutely bolted up and went through the gears in very impressive fashion. There's a lot to like about that performance. So no great surprise to see the horse well fancied for Sir Michael Stout. Again, cliche to say so, but you know, you're anticipating improvement to come at the age of 4, so no surprise to see Abingdon well fancied. Intriguing race, though. You've got Hartford Dancer, who I fancied at a big price at Royal Ascot in the Ribblesdale, and Jim Crowley gave her a good ride in the circumstances, kicked on at just the right point, but was run down in the dying strides. You've got Ajman Princess, who would probably be the selection, although she's a fairly frustrating type, but I don't think there's any disgrace in getting beaten by Batil and Dubka last time out. That was in soft ground at this track in the Pinnacle Stakes, and Batil's a really nice type, and I think she'll probably be suited by this these conditions more than she would have found that race to her liking here. In contrast, I think Dubka probably wants it softer, so Ashram Princess would be the pick. I can see why Abingdon's well fancied, but slight preference for Ajman Princess. I don't particularly like that many in here. There's a couple of frustrating types. The Black Princess in particular doesn't seem to be quite fulfilling her potential, shall we say. Which leaves it open for Abingdon, but I think Azerbaijan Princess is the solid one.
The Black Princess seems to be the sort of horse that people refer to as being consistent and not necessarily in a good way.
Yeah. I mean, I would. Don't get me wrong, if someone said to you, do you want to own a horse with her profile, I'd be thrilled to bits with her.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it comes to backing her as a punter, yeah, you're right. Consistent is... She'd go in the place pot, but you wouldn't be expecting her to battle on.
So Azerbaijan Princess, the pick there for you, Ross.
Correctamundo.
In the Lancashire Oaks. We move back to Sandown now for the distaff. It's a listed race off at 3 o'clock over a mile. Again, of course, it's ones for fillies aged 3 years old only. Again, we've had eight declared for this one. And interesting field here, Ross. Some more exposed runners and some less exposed runners.
Yeah, not a bad little lineup for the three-year-olds here. Yeah, you've got the likes of Standing Rock, who won on debut over at Newbury and beat an experienced type in the shape of Spinnaker. Race hasn't necessarily worked out, but again, well-bred from a top yard. Paco's Angel's likely to be popular as well, who... She's probably one just a bit under the radar. She won a nursery at Goodwood last season and since then has been lumped up in grade. She finished fourth in the Oh So Sharp and then third last time out at Royal Ascot when coming from the back in the Sandringham. Queen of Time was one place behind her in fourth. Dancing Breeze was even further behind. And Tis But a Dream was even further behind that. However, I do think that Tis But a Dream might well reverse the form with a lot of them here. She's a good horse, Tis But a Dream. She won over a mile at Ascot on the straight course a few starts ago when she got her own way in front. And then she was third behind Laugh Aloud in the Princess Elizabeth at Epsom. But again, there's a lack of pace here. And Sylvester de Souza is a perfect jockey to execute this race, I think, from the front aboard Tis But a Dream. And if she'll certainly be suited better by this field and this track than she was by the big field at Ascot last time out. So despite the fact she's got a reverse form with three of these, I think that's perfectly reasonable, a perfectly reasonable expectation given the circumstances.
Tis But a Dream for Ross there. I'd say I'm quite interested in Standing Rock in this. Slightly risky backing first time out maiden winners,
yep,
when they then go straight out to batting company. But that combination of John Gosden and Ryan Moore is it just takes the eye. Obviously, because it's so high profile, but
yeah,
compared to other trainers that Ryan Moore teams up with outside of Aidan O'Brien, I don't seem to remember him running for Gosden that often.
It wouldn't be a regular collaboration, admittedly. In fact, I'll probably be able to pick up 5-year stats if we have a look.
Oh, Ross Briley with the 5-year stats
somehow managed to talk long enough to fill it in. Yeah, Gosden and Ryan Moore teaming up, 32 rides, 7 winners, 22% strike rate, so not too bad at all, really.
Yeah,
in the grand scheme of things, you would have lost money if you backed them all, admittedly, but that's no surprise given, as you said, the profile connections. I'd actually rather back a horse first time in passing company than first time in handicap company.
Yeah,
because just the hustle and bustle of it is a little bit too much for them. Like I said, it shouldn't be run at too much of a gallop, and it's got a decent draw in box two. So, yeah, wouldn't entirely rule it out, but I think Tis But a Dream might well have the experience edge.
Tis But a Dream for Ross in the Sandown Distaff off at 3 o'clock at Sandown Park on Eclipse Day, and it's the race before the big Group 1 off at 3:35 over 1 mile and 2 furlongs. The first time we really get to see the top middle distance three-year-olds take on their older peers this season, Ross, and the betting is dominated by the classic generation.
Yeah, it really is. And it's an absolutely cracking renewal. We've got some very interesting horses, but obviously Cliffs of Moher, a popular bet at the top of the market. Didn't quite get home as strongly as his stablemate Wings of Eagles in the Derby, but he looked likely to do that. I mean, he recorded a remarkable figure when winning a maiden last year at Leopardstown. I think a few people were disappointed him at Chester. He made fairly heavy weather of that victory. But on the other hand, you need to remember how often O'Brien horses improve for a run as well, and he did massively in the Derby, which has worked out well. Obviously, Wings of Eagles has been beaten, but he was beaten by Capri, who was behind him. Cracksman was in there as well, so that form's been franked in the Irish Derby. Permian's come out and won as well at Royal Ascot, and Ben Battle as well, of course, who was fifth, was another Royal Ascot winner. So, to be fair, every race that the Derby runners have gone for since, the form has been franked.
Yeah.
But I can't stop my love affair with Barney Roy now.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that.
he's just such a wonderful horse.
Yeah, yeah.
Potentially, he could easily be unbeaten this season. Things didn't go to plan for him in the Guineas. They didn't go quick enough. Churchill got first run. I'm not going to say team tactics is the wrong description necessarily, but things were set up nicely for the O'Brien camp in that, and Churchill got the run of the race.
Stumbled coming out of the dip as well, Barney Roy, which really didn't help.
Everything went against him.
Yeah.
But from the moment I saw him at Newbury, I thought, I can't wait to see this horse step up to 10 furlongs because he just eats up the ground. He's got a long lolloping stride, and I can't wait to see him over this extra 2 furlongs.
Which is interesting because when Richard Hannon was asked about this and they said, will he stay 1 mile 2 furlongs? He said, I don't know. Let's wait and see.
Right, okay.
Effective. Not, yeah, that's not a direct quote, but words.
Well, Richard, I'll tell you he will. I mean, he's bred to. There's plenty of stamina on the dam side. And I say that just in his run style, he's so strong at the back end of his races that, yeah, I can't wait to see him over this extra 2 furlongs. I thought Eminent ran a hell of a lot better than I thought he would do in the Derby. I thought, well, he was actually the unlucky horse of the race in a way. He seemed to hate the track and things didn't go to plan. I was a bit disappointed with Ulysses and Decorated Knight. I know they were beaten by Highland Reel, who's as tough as anything to get past, but I still thought they were going to go past him. And I think that 3-year-old generation looked quite strong this year, so... yeah, Barney Roy would be the pick.
Could the case with Eminent as well be that I know he won the Craven, but then in the Guineas, you know, he didn't quite have the pace to really do it over the mile. Then over the Derby, maybe he didn't quite get home.
This could be the perfect trip.
Exactly.
Yeah, agreed. But, as I said, I'm a fully paid-up member of the Barney Roy fan club this season, and I thought either the Eclipse or the Judmont International would be where we see him achieve his best.
Well, we've had our say on the Eclipse coming up at Sandown live on William Hill's Racing Radio. Now let's get the thoughts of Sir Anthony McCoy.
The 3:35 is the big race of the day. It's the Eclipse. It's a Group 1 over 1.25 miles. A race in that many of these have a chance of winning. But the two exciting 3-year-olds are the two for me here. Barney Roy, who won the St. James's Palace Stakes at Royal Ascot. He finished second in the Guineas, but there are some question marks over his stamina. It's his first run over 1.25 miles. He is back celebration, so therefore I'm going to go for the more proven stamina in Cliff Samora, a horse that finished second in the Epsom Derby. He travelled really well through the Derby. He got mugged late on by Wings of Eagles, and with the really strong pace that Taj Mahal is likely to set for him, I think that stamina could come into play, and I think he took a lot of beating. One worth to mention is Sullivan of Sylvester Kirk's. He was a bit unlucky in the Derby. He didn't get a great passage through and could have finished closer. And when he ran behind Permian at Royal Ascot, it was a very slow on race and he was too far back. And at the each way prices, Sullivan is definitely worth a mention. But I think Clip Samore will win the Eclipse.
The thoughts of Sir Anthony McCoy there on the Eclipse at Sandown this Saturday. He likes Cliffs of Moher in the race. And you can hear it live here on William Hill's Racing Radio. But that's it for the podcast today. Thanks very much for listening. Thanks to Ross Briley for being with me as well. I've been John Gibby, and William Hill's Daily Racing Podcast will be back tomorrow.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.